But we're going to see what we can get done. We've already put our heads together on more than one item, and looking forward to that. I received some sad news. Brother Tommy Mears has passed away. Brother Tommy, it was a teacher there at Arlington. He's the one that started the World Baptist Youth Conference years and years ago, and taught there for quite some time. He's taught here. He's did a Life of Christ conference and series for us. It's been a while back now. And but their health has been bad for, oh boy, probably 10 to 15 years now. But the funeral is Tuesday, I think it is. And I'll try, Brother Rick, I'll try to probably get over there to that. It's at Pleasant View. I'll try to get over there for that. Well, this particular series is something that, you know, out of the mouth of babes, out of the mouth of Gabe. Brother Gabe asked a question the other day, and the more I got to thinking about that, the more I thought, you know, that would be certainly lawful and expedient to go through that. And his questions, how do you go about choosing the missionaries that you will support? And that's a very good question. Last week, of course, from Deuteronomy 6, we looked at the model of teaching and made several observations that are key about the fluid nature of training. By the way, I practice that here with the interns and the staff. It's a highly fluid process. Also, we looked at the critical issue of timing and seasons, and how that is critical. If you take over a church, that's not the same thing as starting a church. And if you take over a church, you got a lot of different issues, do everything, there's a season. Timing is important, and there have to be thoughtful considerations. Who are they? What have they been doing? I was talking to Brother Nick today. He called me, and we talked quite a while. And some of these same questions are relevant. You know, what's going on and how things are. Who are they? What have they been doing? How long have they been doing what they're doing? Why have they been doing it? And that's not always the same. How many in the church are doing it? How many people are actually involved? How many people are givers? How many people are tithers, giving to missions? How committed are they in doing it, and why? So sometimes starting a new church has its advantages over taking especially a small church that's loaded up with problems. And they've got four people in the church, and those four are competing who's going to control the church, and it's not going to be the new pastor. He's never going to have the direction of the church and leadership of the church. So the point is, wisdom has to come to bear in the needs of change, and the process of change takes place so that damage doesn't occur to the flock. The flock actually always belongs to God, and you have to always remember the flock belongs to God. The flock belongs to God. Doesn't belong to you, but you are there to lead. And some people don't like you to lead. They want to lead. They don't lead their homes. They don't lead their jobs. So they want to come to church, and they want to lead at church. Well, God didn't call them nor qualify them to be a leader at church, but they try to do it nonetheless. And so every once in a while, the preacher has to get the stick out. And it's just the nature of the beast. It's the human factor. Now, when one comes upon a church doing their thing, you find that there's not really a mono track being taken. Some things are being done simply because that's the way they've always been done. They're just kind of they don't think about it. It's just something they do, and they've always been doing it that way. Some things are done in ignorance, but they have good intentions. And oftentimes, you'll find that is the case. What people are doing, don't assume that it's always bad intentions. That's not love believeth all things, by the way. All right? Don't assume that everything's bad intentions, especially if you come from a kind of a blue-collar background and us against them kind of mentality. Beware of that, and it's always a danger, and it's something we all have to face. I know that I do. There are things that are intentionally being done wrong, but they've decided that's what they're going to do, and they're going to stick to it, and they don't want you to make those changes. There are things that are intentionally done right. We praise God for that, and some things that are done good but could always be done better. Now, our concern, of course, should primarily be, if not exclusively be, what does the Bible say? What is the only inspired book in all the world? What does it say? Now, other books can offer some things, and there's plenty of freedoms or liberty, okay, that we have in the Scripture. And so those areas of discernment, it's open. It's open. You can stress this or stress that as long as you stay between the two ditches, you know. You have a lot of different options. Some books are good, and they're useful in that way. But there's only one totally reliable, authoritative source, and that's the Bible. So everything has to be judged by that Bible. Everything. And it doesn't matter if you have the latest and the greatest come along and everybody thinks he's the cat's meow. And boy, he just has more insight than the Antichrist. Well, that very well may be, but he doesn't. He's just got you hooked, you know, some way. Well, how do you do? How do you go about determining who you'll support as a missionary? Well, you have to first ask the question, who's a missionary? A missionary, according to just simple definition, is someone sent on a spiritual mission or religious mission. Missionary, someone sent on a religious mission. In the study of missions, our primary consideration is usually John chapter 1, which you looked at last week, and then also the book of Acts, and then the primary chapters begins in chapter 13. And that's where I invite your attention here tonight. Acts chapter 13. Beginning in verse 1, now there were in the church that was at Antioch certain prophets and teachers, as Barnabas and Simeon that is called Niger, Lucius of Cyrene, or Cyrene, if you like that, Manane, which is brought up of Herod the Tetrarch, and Saul. So Jews and Gentiles together, and by the way, different nationalities together, all right here in this church. As they ministered to the Lord and fasted, the Holy Ghost said, separate me, Barnabas and Saul, for the work whereunto I have called them. And when they had fasted and prayed and laid their hands on them, they sent them away. So we just barely got into point one last week. So I hope to at least get through point one into number two and maybe even touching on number three tonight. A missionary evangelist is one who is sent from a New Testament church. There are went ones and there are sent ones. And we want to be engaged with those who are sent, properly sent, out of a New Testament church. Now, years ago, mission agencies thought to send out missionaries around the world, and they did so. And, and it's not without some fruit, all right? But two wrongs don't make a right. They may have honestly felt the churches were not doing their job as they should, but again, that's no justification. I mean, start a New Testament church and do it the right way. Just because your family's dysfunctional doesn't mean that the next family has to borrow your problems. Okay? So no justification for disobedience of God's word and that which is taught in God's word. Years ago, of course, I pointed out last week, I noticed there's Bible schools and mission agencies grow to wrongfully think, they're the ones sending out the missionaries. They're the ones sending out the evangelists involved in the training of many men and women. And in fact, they are seriously engaged in the training aspect of all of that. Yet nowhere in the New Testament do we find missionary evangelists sent out of anything other than a New Testament church. So it is exclusive. It is an absolute. They must be sent out of a New Testament church. I had a girl call me today, said she's raised in a Baptist church, now involved in a non-denominational media ministry. And I said, well, what do you believe? Well, we're kind of non-denominational. I said, that's really foolish, and I'm not going to buy it. But let me ask you this. Do you believe salvation is a gift of God, not of works in any way, form or fashion, or baptism? She said, yes, that's what we believe. And I said, then you're not a Protestant. You are something by what you believe. And it's just naive to suggest to anybody a reasonable study background otherwise. Now, in the effort to be even-handed towards these mission agencies, and I want to kind of offer the whys and wherefores, because I want you to dwell with knowledge. I want you to understand how things happen or how things come to happen. Let me say, some pastors are negligent in their work and oversight of their missionaries. And this can encourage an agency to step up and meet needs that a pastor is not otherwise meeting. If something has to be done and the church and the pastor not doing anything, you might just think, if you're on that board, you might just think, well, something's got to be done. This man is in open immorality, and something has to, you follow me? So I want to, again, don't just assume there's no motive, there's no good motive here whatsoever to be done. Now, it still doesn't make it right, but pastors can be negligent and they can be negligent in a wide variety of ways. Years ago, I called a pastor of a missionary and asked him a question about his missionary's financial support. Now, it's right after we got started here, so that's going to be back in probably 94, 90, 95, right in that area. And I was asking the pastor, do you know how much support your missionary has? Because it was way, way, way above the others. Now, most never get that information. We get that information. I ask for that information periodically, usually about every third year at longest. About every third year, we do an evaluation of that, and we catch things like this. And so we caught something, and when I called up the pastor, and he said, first thing he says, well, have you talked to the mission director? Well, who's responsible for the missionary? The mission director or the pastor in the church? Well, the pastor in the church, and he ought to know what the salary is coming in of his man. I mean, how can he know that he's actually taken care of if he doesn't know that? All right? So he told me, he said, well, have you talked to the mission director? Well, I know exactly what the mission director was going to say because he was a personal friend, Brother Tommy Rayleigh. And Brother Rayleigh's going to say, have you talked to the pastor? And so I said, well, he said, well, you have my permission to get anything you can out of Brother Rayleigh. And so I said, well, okay. So, I knew what the support was, and I talked to him about it. And he says, well, have you talked to the pastor? So I called the pastor back and talked to him and told him what the mission director said. And I said, we are Independent Baptists. We're not Southern Baptists. And we believe that the church has that authority and the autonomy of that church is at stake. And so what say you to this issue instead of just divesting yourself off like others do in other different models and different type of Baptist organizations? So I called the pastor back and he told me this, told him support of his missionary, which was in question, was high at that time. And years ago, if I remember right, that was over $12,000 back then. And that was a good $5,000 to $6,000 on average above others. And this was also in a poor country. That's certainly going to make a difference. There's a big difference between Honduras and New Zealand. Okay, or Japan. Just getting to Japan these days is outrageous. And this man was just starting out in the ministry. He had just gotten to the field, just finished up his deputation. So he didn't have a camp ministry. He didn't have a church. He didn't have any additional major expenses, you know, that he could justify this, that, and the other. And he gave me kind of a Jim Baker answer when I wrote him. If you don't know who Jim Baker is, it's a long-lost flim-flam artist, you know, of the charismatic movement. Well, the pastor told me, he says, well, all that he knew, that's a problem in and of itself. All that he knew is that he looked at his missionary, had looked at other missionaries on that field to determine what he was going to need when he actually got on the field. Well, I'm staring at the paperwork of three other missionaries on that field who had been on that field for years. Well, and they were with the same mission agency, by the way. And I'm like, well, he seemed to have ignored these. And so I told the pastor, I said, would you like to know, without giving their names, would you like to know what their actual support is? And he said, well, I guess I probably should say yes. And I'm like, I think you probably should say yes. And so I gave him those. And of course, then he understood why I was actually calling. He says, well, how did you actually get this information? I said, it's simple, a request that you make the request. If you supported a missionary, you could ask and you could get a financial printout, workup, and we would always break it out so that they're, if you're on deputation or on furlough particularly, we would take out those additional love offerings because they're going to do better financially that particular year because they're stateside with additional love offerings. Take that out of the equation. That way we'd get an apples-to-apples comparison and have something that we can use to make evaluations. So that was a problem, and that's a pastor who's being negligent. He doesn't even know what his missionary is being supported. He has no idea if his missionary is starving to death or not. That's not good. Nor does he have any idea whether or not his missionary is creating and making merchandise out of God's people, which he was doing. He simply did not know and would not know. Now, another occasion, I give you these stories, and I want you to know there are plenty on the good side, more good than bad. But if you don't do your due diligence, you'll never find the rotten apples that you need to get out of the bushel. Okay? So on another occasion, a missionary was taking far too long to get to the field. That's a problem. He had just around 30% of his support in 2 years. So he's out raising money for 2 years, and he's only got about 30% of his support. By the way, 2.5 years is plenty of time for a missionary to raise his support going from church to church. If he'll fill his calendar, he'll be able to do that. There may be some exceptions. COVID can interrupt, something like that. And we have made allowances for that, by the way, during COVID. But to make matters worse, the missionary on deputation I'm talking about at that time, he was the son-in-law of his pastor. And now he's nowhere close to getting his support together in 2 years. By that timeline, he's going to be 6 years plus on deputation. That's way, way, way outside of normal bounds and acceptable ranges. All right. So when I spoke to the pastor, his pastor, the father-in-law, about this problem, the pastor agreed, that's a problem. That's a problem. And I said, well, what are you going to do about it? He's your man. What are you going to do about it? And he said, well, he really doesn't listen to me too good. And I'm like, well, you're going to send him out as a missionary and he doesn't listen to you too good. We've got problems all over the place. And he said, would you talk to him for me? And I've said, so you want me to be his pastor and kick him in the teeth? That's what you want me to do. Is that correct? He says, well, maybe he'll listen to you. He's not listening to me. So I'm like, you're not willing to do your job, and so you're going to kick it down the field to me, and you want me to do the dirty work, me to be the bad cop, and kick your man in the teeth. But that's what you want. Well, I don't mind kicking teeth in every once in a while. Well, I do, but I just thought I'd give it a rise. I really don't get a kick out of it at all, but I probably shouldn't have said that. Now you're going to think I did, but I don't. All right. So anyway, I called him up. And I said, first thing I asked him, I said, where are you? And he said, I'm home. Just like, where else would I be? Well, how about out on deputation raising the money you're supposed to be raising to get to the mission field? How about that for a start? And I got into it, and if you want to know particulars, I said, do you shave? And he said, yeah. And I said, do you look in the mirror when you shave? And he said, yes, sir, I do. I want you to know everything that I'm going to say. I've got approval of your pastor, I didn't say father-in-law, I said your pastor, to try to encourage you in some strong language. And he said, okay. And I said, you do shave? And he said, yes. And I said, how are you going to feel when you're shaving yourself 2 years from now and you're not a missionary and you've lied to your sweet wife and your children that you're going to be a missionary? Because you're not going to make it. More people are going to start dropping you than supporting you unless they're negligent themselves and don't do their own homework to know how much time you're taking to get to the field. It got about this quiet, And then eventually, the sobs came in. The number one reason missionaries don't get to the field sooner is they don't fill their schedule. And here he is, I'm home. So I kicked him in the seat of the pants and in the teeth, I guess, and so I ended up doing the job of the missionary's pastor at his request because he was not being heard. By the way, that missionary, after I think it was 5 or 6 years of deputation, finally went to the mission field and sent me a letter. Just want you to know that I finally arrived on the mission field. And I thought I'd just send you word of that, and I appreciate the encouragement. Well, I'm glad he got to the mission field, but he didn't deserve to get there. Okay, just between you and me and the fence post. He didn't deserve to get there, and he's probably too lazy to be supported in the first place. Somebody has to be the grown-up. Somebody has to be the parent and learn how to say no. And if somebody's not going to do the job, they should not be worthy of that support. That support comes from people just like you and me. And I work for my living, and you work for your living, and we have a sacred trust with that, a bond. With one another, that's going to be have some oversight, some proper oversight. A point of insight, when I called him, he said, I'm at home. Like, where else would I be? And by the way, in his when I was reproving him, of course, he was crying. And I told him, I said, crying doesn't solve the problem. getting to work does. Now, I can tell you that that whole dynamic is getting worse with the more snowflakes that are being sired in the world. That's not getting better. Now, if that story sounds hard to you, I'm sorry. I'm trying to tell you the truth of what happens. And it's getting worse. It's not getting better. Just expecting just because I put my hand out, you know, I am worthy of support. No, you're not. No, you're not. So here's a case where a sending pastor, here again, is negligent. And so if a mission agency is trying to work and encourage, you know, other guys, you know, you can see how they would start to step up and things can easily slip from proper to improper if a church and pastor are not doing their job. So the mission agency starts stepping up and meets a need of oversight and with enough time and even perhaps policy regarding such. The next thing you know, the human factor has kicked in and they're thinking of themselves more highly than they ought to think and believe that they are in charge of the missionary, not the home church and the pastor. That's how it happens. And it happens very smoothly and naturally. I'll say biblically, but just naturally. It just happens. It just happens. It's like taxes. They just happen. And by the way, IRS knows the history of the failure of churches and pastors just like this. We had one, the church didn't withhold the taxes as they should, and the missionary got in trouble with the IRS. Had over $50,000 in penalties and et cetera, you know, that he was going to owe to the IRS. And so they know this well about pastors and churches. Churches often, they don't know how to do it or don't learn what to do or then are just negligent and don't do it. And so the IRS would prefer that missionaries have some affiliation with a mission agency or a clearinghouse, that problem is kind of curtailed. Now, there's no biblical mandate for that. There's, you know, nothing in the Bible says they have to do that. I'm in general favor of it, but we don't require it. So we don't require missionaries to have a missionary clearinghouse. Their home church can do it just fine. But I'd strongly encourage that they make sure that they're doing it. Because they're not, when the IRS comes after you, they're not going to go after the pastor. They're going to come after you. And so you better make sure that they're doing what they should do. What they should be doing. Now, when I started this studying this program and learning years ago, I used to believe the most important question was what church was a missionary out of? But that was tweaked after several years to the question of who is your pastor and what is he like? Who is your pastor and what is he like? Will he call you on the carpet if he has to, if he needs to? Will he be the grown-up? Is he going to do his biblical job? Because if the church is good, but the pastor doesn't tend to his duties, then things are still going to be negligent. That make sense? I mean, it's still not going to be covered. And sometimes the churches have no earthly idea what's going on. But their pastors have kind of just whitewashed it. And so you don't know that you have, you know, 25% of people on support that are not even doing particular works of missionaries. You don't even know. And it's not like they go around wearing them on their sleeve. Or say the pastor is related to the missionary, or that missionary has several family members in the church. That creates a different dynamic altogether in the church. Pastor doesn't want to tend to that business because of the possible fallout that he can have in the congregation with the family members by that confrontation. So right, doing right has to trump, for the pastor, doing right has to trump all other matters with the man who's going to serve as a pastor. And that goes to the issue of his character and his integrity. Will he do right? Will he do right even when it's tough and it hurts to do it? Will he choose to do right? One of the best ways to determine a rogue individual is to question their submission to God's authority and God's pastor. Their home church and home pastor is critical to that initial question. The tendency, of course, for us all as human beings to think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. It doesn't matter who you are. Every man, every woman has that tendency. Just like we're prone to leave, as the sheep, we're prone to leave the God we love. We are prone to think too much of ourselves. And the tendency of schools and mission agencies is to think too much of themselves. And next thing you know, you have an imbalance. You know, schools think the churches exist for them instead of the schools actually existing for the churches. And that's always a problem. It always has been, really, always has been the tendency. They may start out well and preach it and preach it and preach it. Next thing you know, there's a drift, there's a drift, there's a drift. And next thing you know, well, what are you going to do for us? What are you going to do for us? Why don't you pay off our debt? Why don't you pay off our debt? Sometimes camps get going and they're 3 years in. They build a big new building. They want you to be paying off and going to Hawk to pay off everything that they have decided to do. But they're not paying off all of yours. In other words, they want to have a different standard applied to them that you're applying to yourself and your own ministry. So the tendency is to think too much of yourself and remind yourself that you're not there, or you are there to be a service to church, as important service as that is. It's still a service, not the authority for anything done in this age. And I made mention of this, and I want to touch upon it as well again, that now I'm on this topic. I'm going to say any church or parachurch organization seeking to steal a student away from their home church without regard for the authority of that home church is out of line. They're out of line. Churches send their students off to schools in a sober trust. A sober trust. You can say, as old Rush Limbaugh would say, on loan from God. They are on loan. They're on loan. They weren't gifted to you. They are on loan. So no church sends their students off to a school to be redirected for ministry. We'll decide now where you're going to go from here. In other words, thank you, church. Now we'll take it from here. Wrong. Wrong. That's way wrong. That's way wrong. And all things should be considered with their home church and ministry where they were brought up. Any agency or school which makes this mistake is wrong and wrong-headed. Wrong-headed. And usually you have the elder men work overtime to keep that in check, because it's usually the middle-aged guys and the young bucks that, rev everything up, hoorah for the home team, and next thing you know, they're out of bounds. That's usually the elders, that have seen all of this that I'm talking about, and, 60, 70, 80, that are saying, hold on now, and you'll hear them say, mission agencies do not send out missionaries, schools do not send out preachers, churches do this, and they'll just throw that stuff and ping that kind of stuff in their sermons. And that's what they're seeking to do. They're seeking to keep all of this in a proper check. I am very thankful that most often this is honored at schools, by the way, that we support and recognize, and that if a student gets in trouble, the first person they're going to call is going to be the home pastor. And that's the way it should always be done. That's the way it should always be done. By the way, had this been practiced at Pensacola Christian College, which it had been prior to that, a Christian friend and mother of mine would still be alive. So don't try to convince me it's not important. We're talking about Denise Luthold. She would still be alive. She would still be alive, because the immorality that was taking place and the disciplinary measures that were already taken upon that girl from Lithuania, the home churches would have been alerted and disciplinary measures would have been brought to bear. And Denise Luthold would still be alive. Pretty serious, huh? Yeah. Well-known evangelist sat in my office and lied to my face how he was a member in good standing of his home church, when he had written several months earlier to be removed from his church membership and created problems in that church, hoping I wouldn't find out. Well, all I did was write the pastor. Is this true? Wasn't true at all. I lied to my face about it. Didn't have a proper authority and still going about ministry. He's a went one, not a sent one. You with me? He's a went one. He's going, but he's not sent. He didn't have any church membership, none whatsoever. In Acts chapter 5, 15:24, forasmuch as ye have heard that certain which went out from us have troubled you with words, subverting your souls, saying, we must be circumcised and keep the law, to whom we gave no such commandment. It seemed good unto us, being assembled with one accord, to send chosen men unto you, selected men, chosen men unto you, with our beloved Barnabas and Paul, men that have hazarded their lives for the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. So no servant of the Lord should be doing what is right in their own eyes, period. We're not renegades in this. We have to be tethered to a New Testament church. We have to be tethered to a pastor and to a church. In Judges 17:6, in those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Proverbs 21:2, every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord pondereth the heart. They always come up and say, well, I have a good reason not to belong to any church because of this, that, and the other. There are a lot of churches around. Once you find one, and join them. Well, I plan on doing that now that you bring that up. Well, how long has it been since you've been a member of a New Testament church? 4 years. Behind the scenes. It's important to God. I had a PhD who wanted to be considered as pastor to Gatewood Baptist Church years ago. Maintained church membership was not necessary today. I asked him who he thought the 120 people of the book of Acts were, just numbers, or did that represent people? It represents people, by the way. So he was fairly rejected and rebuked. He didn't like it, but tough. Do you want to pastor a church? You're a went one, you're not a sent one. You're not a member of any church. Now, sent ones, but that does not necessarily mean financially supported. Being sent out of a church does not necessarily mean that they are receiving financial support, prayerful support, yes, but does not assume that they are receiving financial support out of that church. Sent in this context means authorized. Authorized. They have to be authorized by that church or commissioned. Sent means called by God, commissioned by their own church. One church, by the way. One church. There's a tendency these days for sometimes a missionary to have a sending church and then they kind of have another little partnering church, and sometimes it's the wife's home church. I have no problem with somebody having a tender relationship with another church, but there's one home church. There's one home church and one home pastor of that church. Okay? Now, this is often ordination or commissioning service if they are already ordained, whereby they are authorized to go out representing the Lord and their church. If you recall, those who've been with us for a while, we sent Richard Kretzel out to be a missionary to Israel, and it was shortened by illness and eventually death. And that's sad. Sent a missionary out to Israel. 98% of support, I think it was, 98% of the support was raised. And finally, we figured out he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And that was sad. We ordained Brother Ben and sent him out to Emmanuel Baptist Church to be their pastor. Same is true for Brother Stephen Giordano. Others in their secondary roles were sent out by blessing of the pastor in the church, like Brother Daniel Robb. He was sent out. Now, he's not ordained to that level, but it's a secondary level. Sent out Gary Boyd, who was later ordained by a sister church and sent out of that church. He's now a pastor of a church in Oklahoma. And that's the pattern, and that should remain the pattern. Missionaries have to be sent out. Evangelists have to be sent out of a New Testament church. Not this universal body that never meets. They have to be sent out of a local New Testament church. And somebody said calling a church local New Testament church is like saying wet water. If it's water, it's wet. Okay? That's the pattern, should remain the pattern. No one has the authority to send themselves. No one. No one. So when I go and I preach somewhere else, it's a greeting in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and New Heights Baptist Church. Always represent you everywhere I go and everything I do. Everywhere. Again, sent means authorized. More on this later, but may I remind you, Paul was primarily supported by his own backup trade. Every Jew, and by the way, there's a kind of a grassroots movement going on with some pastors that are strongly recommending missionaries or church planters, especially going into kind of hard areas. It's hard everywhere, but hard areas to get a backup trade, to get, you know, some kind of trade that you can actually make a living and go do something. And I'm in favor of that. But every Jewish boy brought up always had a backup trade. Paul's backup trade was a tent maker. Now, making tents was a lucrative trade. All right, it wasn't, you know, poor boy stuff. They had to pay good money, and they put together quality tents You know, and if you have a lot of nomadic people, they pay good. They want to have the better tents for all types of weather. So that was his primary support. Missionaries sometimes say, well, Paul was only supported by churches. Wrong. His supplemental support came from churches like Philippi, a church at Philippi. But that was not his primary support. His primary support was as a tent maker. Just read the book. Just read the book. It's all you got to do. Read the book. And you'll find that is the case. As a matter of fact, he bragged about it and didn't want that to be taken away from him. All right? And by the way, he wasn't alone. There are others in his company that did the same thing. So, missionaries sent once may be letter A. Supported financially and fully by a church, by their own church, their own sending church. Now today that is generally referred to as the extended staff concept. Now that means a church like ours, we would send out a missionary and we would pay his full salary so he doesn't have to go anywhere else and raise support. Now it's very difficult for a church that is not very, very large to keep missions in front of the church, because what are you going to do? Hear from the same man, you know, once a month? He's not going to have that many interesting things to say. All right? And so it's just not, it doesn't work well unless you're a very, very large congregation, and then you can make the balance work, because typically you want to have in 7 to 8 missionaries in staggered throughout the year to keep missions in front of the church. It's kind of vision and how easily a vision can be lost and maintained within a church to keep the main thing, the philosophy of the ministry, on the right page. Make sense? All right, so that's one option. Letter B, not supported financially at all. Not supported financially, prayerfully, but just not supported financially. Some people are capable of making money anywhere in the world. Or maybe they're independently wealthy and they don't need support. Perfectly fine. We had a pastor friend down in Florida who was independently wealthy and didn't need to take a salary. And we encouraged him to take a salary only at the end of his career as a pastor, if you want to call it that, because how is he going to train the church to pay another pastor's salary if they're not used to paying a salary? But he said, I don't need it. Why should I take a salary? I don't need it. But by the way, he did do that, and they started paying him a salary. Letter C, supported more substantially by their home churches. In other words, they got plenty of skin in the game, so they support maybe $300 to $500 a month or even $1,000 a month, and so they demonstrate that they're seriously behind their man. That recommends that man to other people today, and more often than not, that's what's practiced today. In general, it's going to be, if somebody sent out of a particular church, support out of that church is at least going to be $300 a month. That's kind of the starting area. And it just depends on their burden and what all they have commitments already made and how many they may have. But it's not absolutely necessary that home church lead in that way, but it does demonstrate that they have skin in the game. And by having their skin in the game, it commends their man to others who would consider them for financial support. Make sense? Make sense? Okay. Sure, I can go over it again. And by the way, and that's a perfectly legitimate a channel, I think, and a healthy one. Unless there's other issues at play similar to that of the Apostle Paul, which I think are absolutely the best. Absolutely the best. A lot of countries now, though, they've kind of wised up, and they will not allow foreigners to hold employment to take away jobs from their people. All right? You know? Or now they've gotten so far down that road that they've learned how to do professional shakedowns on our missionaries to demand goods and services and products for them to even have a visa to be in their country in the first place. It used to be they were thankful that they were there. Come help us. Now they demand this, that, and the other, and it's just, it's a shakedown. But it's a governmental shakedown, so it's legal. But it's a shakedown nonetheless. And then letter D, there are those who are supported primarily by their own labor and supplemented by church support, which is what we find from the Apostle Paul. There's no mention I know of that the church in Antioch financially supported Paul. Doesn't mean it didn't happen, but you're making an argument from silence to try to maintain that. Makes sense? All right, but there's no evidence of that. But it would be highly out of the ordinary, especially in the Oriental custom, to send out somebody out of your church without a blessing. That would be strange. Okay, so though I say it'd be an argument out of absence, it's not an argument outside of normal cultural norms. Okay, the cultural norm would have been that they would do something for Paul and company, by the way, for all of them as they were leaving. It would be considered, for us, especially in the South, it would be considered bad manners. Say, bye, see ya. Instead of, here's a $100 bill, you know what I mean? So it's just bad manners. And it will certainly be out of the normal customs in Bible times. Number two. All right, so missionary evangelist has to be sent out of a New Testament church. Has to. No option. They have to be sent out. So one of the first questions we're going to ask, what church are you out of? What's your pastor? Did your pastor approve you, commission you? Have you been commissioned to go out and do this work? What exactly have you been commissioned to do? And that gets to another point here in just a minute. But number two, missionary evangelists and are sent ones who are qualified for the task to which they are sent. They're qualified to. You don't send somebody to do a job if they don't know how to do the job in the first place. All right, so they have to be trained sufficiently enough to, at minimum, get started on doing a job. Now, when you started your job, did you know everything about your job? No, but you knew sufficiently enough about your job to get started at that job. That's what's absolutely required of a missionary. Now, just because someone is a Christian doesn't make them qualified for vocational ministry. Just because somebody wants to do something, but want is good. Want is a good part of the equation of the called. Want, desire. If a man desire the office of a bishop, so it's an excellent place to start. But it doesn't make them qualified for leadership in gospel ministry simply because they got saved. Training time is not wasted time. Far too many are mom called and daddy sent and end up in leadership, but they're not qualified for leadership. And it's not kind to an individual to put them in a leadership position for which they are not ready to endure. That's not kind. It's not kind at all in my mind. I would rather drag my foot a little bit, and try to ensure to the best of my ability someone who's got all their hopes and dreams staked on something is qualified and ready to go, then go too soon and implode. Is that fair? I mean, I'd rather drag my foot just a little bit, you know, to send them out. And if they're worth their salt, they're going to want to go too soon. But they're not ready to go. And sending somebody out who's not ready to go is not a kind act. It sounds really good and it looks really good at the home church. They get up and, man, here we're going to charge hell with a squirt gun. Yeah, and they're going to fizzle out too. They're going to come back in licking their wounds and they're going to be selling insurance for the next 40 years. Is that really where we want to go? Is that really what we want? Well, bless our heart, look at here. We sent out a bunch. Yeah, but none of them are sustained. Is that really what we want to see? Is that what we want even out of our own children? No, not at all. Now again, back in Acts 13, you see they have to be qualified by their lives of service. Now there were in the church was at Antioch certain prophets and teachers, as Barnabas and Simeon, that's called Niger, and Lucius of Cyrene, Nain, which had been brought up with Herod the Tetrarch and Saul, as they ministered to the Lord and fasted. So they were not unaware or unengaged in ministry. They were already involved in ministry, already serving the Lord. So they have to be qualified by their lives of service. Qualified by their lives of service. If they're not doing the work here with a better environment, how in the world are they going to do the work there with a lesser environment? I asked a Sunday school teacher, if you can't build a Sunday school class here, what makes you think you can go overseas and build a Sunday school class in a church over there? Y'all got real quiet. It's an honest question for an adult. I want to talk about children stuff here. We're talking about adults. If you can't do this in your own culture, what makes you think you're going to do it in a totally different culture? I see y'all don't like that too much. But it's the truth. Anybody in management want to say amen? It's the truth. You don't send children out to do grown-up jobs, even if they're 25 or 30 years old, or even older than that. Even older than that. Now, as they were ministering, they were going servants of the Lord for those to be considered. By the way, someone says, well, you know, interns or those that are brought on here, they're not necessarily a qualified. No, they are being qualified. For someone to be qualified, there has to be a process whereby they go from unqualified to now being qualified. We don't send them out until they're qualified. But somebody's got to think enough of them to bring them in, to teach them, to train them, to help them, to encourage them, to kick them in the teeth when they need it. Right? To teach them what they need to be successful in the Lord's work. Because less than that is certainly not kind. How would you like it? You know, if your husband, I'm going to be a preacher, I'm going to be a missionary. Oh, my husband's going to be a preacher, my husband's going to be a missionary. You tell your little ones every night, Daddy's going to be a preacher, Daddy's going to be a missionary, Daddy's going to be a preacher, Daddy's going to be a missionary. 10 years later, Daddy's going to be a preacher, Daddy's going to be a missionary. 15 years later, Miss Andrew, Daddy's going to be a preacher, Daddy's going to be a missionary. We're going to get that building in there sooner or later, you know. That's the inside joke, you know, about their skit years ago. Sooner or later, you're going to have to tell those teenage kids, Daddy's never going to be a preacher and Daddy's never going to be a missionary. That's why I was asking the question. You shave yourself every day. You look at yourself in the mirror. Are you going to be able to live with yourself? About that time, he started crying. I said, crying won't solve the problem. You better get to work and do your job. Get to work and do your job. Your job is to raise your support and get to the field and not drag your foot around the United States spending one weekend out of the month going to churches and making a pitch. By the way, you know, Brother Rayleigh said, well, you know, some people do better at presentation. And on average, most missionaries, for every 3 churches they present to, they'll pick up one of those in support. It's 1 out of 3. That's the nation's average. I asked him, what's your average? For the churches, you know, because, okay, let's just say, by the way, I've known complete nerds who raise their support simply because they make the call. Wear tube socks, I mean, it has no relevance. You just have to make the calls and you'll get the support. I can give you names and email addresses. But I asked him, I said, so what is your ratio of support for the amount of the presentation that you make? And he said, well, and I said, no, what is it? Do you know? He says, well, yeah, about every 3 churches, 2 of those will pick us up. So that's twice the average, the national average, of what other missionaries have found. So it had nothing to do, had absolutely nothing to do with a lousy pitch at churches. A lousy presentation, we'd call it at churches. At work, you call it a pitch. At church, we call it a presentation. So it had nothing to do. His presentation must have been great. 2 out of 3. And here he is, 20% support in 2 years. Had nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. Interns are being qualified. Qualifications are set to raise the bar higher, not lower. Qualifications mean that you're going up, not down. Okay? 1 Timothy 5:22, lay hands suddenly on no man. It's talking about ordination. Don't put your hands suddenly on a man. Prove them, right? Prove them. Make sure they have the goods. Make sure they can do the work. Make sure they'll do the work even when no one is looking. You know, some people, some workforces, you know, you work more productive from home than you did at work because you had too many complications and interruptions at work. But other people do a lot lousier at home than they do at work because the boss is not around. So it just depends, right? It just depends. So sometimes you have to kind of be absent to kind of see how are they going to carry themselves. You know, when they think you're not there, and then you peep out the window to see how they're doing out there in the yard, and they're walking to do a chore, and they're walking about like this. And they're here, they're on payroll, and they're walking like that. They're not meditating, they're lazy. They're lazy. And as a manager, you have to consider, are they going to be worthy of financial support to go to a foreign mission field when nobody's going to be peeping out of any window and looking at them? What are they going to do when nobody's looking? I see you don't like that either. It's a true saying, if a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth the good work. Bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, be patient, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, and on it goes. Similarly, qualifications of a widow indeed. Well, you know, bless her heart. Well, no, that's not the standard. Well, she's a good woman. That's not the standard either. Well, she's kind to the children. That's not the standard either. It's a woman who's widowed, and widowed indeed, who has committed herself to the high standards of service for a substantial period of time, or she's not to be taken into the number, period. Church is not to be charged. I better read that one because you're giving me ugly looks out there, you know. Honor widows that are widows indeed, 1 Timothy 5:3. But if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to quiet their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. In other words, take care of your own family. Now she that is a widow indeed and desolate, alone, trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day, a very spiritual-minded, God-fearing woman. But she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth, and these things give in charge that they may be blameless. But if any provide not for his own, especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Let not a widow be taken. Listen now, they're talking about qualification. Let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old. How old is that? 60. Having been the wife of one man. Well, that kind of does away with this idea of multiple marriages is all just perfectly okay. Keep reading the book. Well reported of for good works. Wonderful reputation in the Lord. If she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she have washed the saints' feet, if she have relieved the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. Qualifications. For the church to be charged, just as simply she's a widow? No. Qualifications. Always raise the bar. Qualifications for those being sent out is not to be lowered, it's to be raised. It's to be raised. I talk about the standards of the world. Standards of the church shouldn't be lower than the standards of the world. And the standards of those who are sent once needs to be higher than even the standards of those in the normal in the church. And minimum should be a cut above. Not a dude. Letter B and letter C. Let me just give you these and I'll quit. Qualified by their calling. In chapter 13 verse 2. Says, for the work whereto I have called them. It's paramount. It's critical. That you know that you're called of God to do a work. You've got to know it. You've got to know it. It's what will keep you going when you don't want to keep going. I don't have a choice. I've got to do this. I've got to do it. And letter C, qualified by their commission. In verse 3, when they had fasted and prayed, they laid their hands on them. They sent them away. They were sent ones. They were commissioned. How would you like to have been commanded by an officer that was not commissioned? That's a renegade. It's a renegade. It's somebody who's sending themselves. They weren't sent. So they were sent ones and not sent ones. And number 3, and I'll pick up here next time. Missionary evangelists are sent ones to do a particular thing. not whatever they want to do, but they're sent out to do a particular thing. A particular thing. In other words, we have a job description. It's not that we get to do, preachers get to do whatever we want to do and just get paid to do whatever we want to do, as long as somehow I can spiritualize it. That's not what we find in the Scripture. All right? So, y'all get anything out of this, or y'all just kind of, am I misreading you? Y'all have sour grapes or something for supper tonight? Huh? I'm misreading you? Maybe just you, but I got some of them pegged. I'll tell you that right now. Let's stand together for prayer. Lord bless you guys.